The way I'd like to frame this whole residency is along the teaching of the Eightfold Path. And before I get into that, I wonder if you can just raise your hand if you're familiar with this teaching of the Four Noble Truths. So if this is something that you're familiar with, is everyone familiar with this or no? So there's a few people that are not familiar with that. So raise your hand if you're not familiar with it so much. Okay, good. So I'm going to go over that just to frame it, and then I'll get into how we'll see the Eightfold Path, and to see that we have this opportunity of really practicing this path in our daily lives. That's how we're going to be weaving the Dharma into our lives. The teaching on the Four Noble Truths was the first teaching that the Buddha gave to his five friends. It was in a place just north of Varanasi in India, where he gave this teaching. And it's a teaching that you can find in probably almost every school of Buddhism. So it's such a foundational understanding of this path. And so I just want to briefly go over it, because it'll also play a role in terms of how we weave the Dharma into our lives. One way of understanding the Four Noble Truths is that it's based on a medical model, at least is one understanding, a medical model that was in use during the Buddha's time. And the way this medical model would work is that the first step was you have to just say what the problem is, what the disease is. And then the second one is you need to state, well, if you knew what the problem is or the disease, we could say, to state what the cause of that is. You know, if you're trying to alleviate this disease, it's really important to get a sense of, well, what's causing it? And then when you have those two down, you want to know, well, what's the prognosis? What's going to be the outcome here that we're looking for? And here it would be, so that would be the third one, okay, kind of the solution here. And then the fourth step of this model is, what's the way to that solution? So we have a disease, we know the cause, and then, you know, often the solution is going to be the end of that disease. So how are we going to get to the end of that disease? So the Buddha uses this, yet the disease he's looking at is our suffering or our discontent. And so the first noble truth is just this fact that there is suffering. And one of the things that's so striking to me about this that I want to point out is where this spiritual path begins compared to other spiritual paths. That where do we begin? We begin with an experience that probably all of you can relate to. Who here has not suffered, right? You know that experience through your own subjective experiences. So we're not starting on some belief or doctrine or dogma. We're starting with a subjective experience that you know. So I think there's something really fascinating to me of the practicality of this teaching. Oh, okay, so we can start on the same page. Okay, this is what we have, discontent. There's the dis-ease. And of course, I'm using these quite different terms, discontent or not okay, all the way to blown out suffering. This is the realm of the first noble truth. The second noble truth, so the second step in this medical model, well, what's the cause of suffering? And the Buddha says that it's craving. Craving causes suffering. But when he uses the word craving, sometimes I think it's not such a great word, because it's referring to something much bigger than craving. You could say it's the reactivity in the mind that causes suffering. So it's the mind's obsessive grasping onto experience, or obsessively pushing something away or checking out. And what I want to point out about the second noble truth is it helps define the kind of suffering that we're going to be exploring, namely subjective suffering, the kind of suffering that my mind creates on top of already the difficulties that we have being a human being. So just to clarify that as far as that goes. You know, it's like we have a health condition. That's just the way it is. But what does our mind add to it that creates the complications that create this so-called suffering of the First Noble Truth? So you hear how the cause is clarifying what exactly we're exploring. And then the Third Noble Truth is simple. Well, what we know the cause, we know the disease, and what's the solution here? It's the cessation of the cause. The cessation of craving is going to lead to the cessation of suffering. So the Third Noble Truth is really about our freedom in our lives. And then the Fourth Noble Truth is, well, what's the way out of it? Well, the way to end craving or the end reactivity is through this Eightfold Path. And what I want to spend really our time on is this Eightfold Path. And I actually don't like big lists. And so we're going to use the shortened version, which I love. You can always find these different variations. So the shortened version of the Eightfold Path are these three domains. The Pali words are sila, which is ethical conduct. These are going to be, we're probably going to explore this a little bit tonight. The second one is samadhi. And samadhi means concentration, but in this context, we can say it's really meditation, the meditation that we're going to be doing this weekend. And then punya, which is wisdom. And the wisdom we're going to be looking at is we're going to fold it back into starting to understand the Four Noble Truths in our life. And so I'll get into these a little bit. But this is the domain, and hopefully we can make it real and apply it to your lives and in a relevant way. And the Four Noble Truths, why are they noble? So why is this word used? The understanding is that when I engage in the Four Noble Truths as a practice, it's ennobling. It's that which makes me noble. And there's a cultural context to this too, which I think is very interesting, is when the Buddha taught, the ones who were noble was dependent upon the family that you were born into. So if you were born a Brahmin, then you were noble. If you were born an untouchable, no matter what you did, you weren't going to be noble. And so the Buddha decides to steal that word and basically has this commentary and says, it has nothing to do with what family you're born into. It has to do with how you are in the world, the kind of freedom that you manifest, the way you walk through the world, maybe through kindness and compassion, rather than, you know, obsessive fear or obsessive hatred. So to me, there's something so cool about also the social commentary to this. It's resituating on who gets valued or the qualities in human beings that get valued, rather than some family that you come from. So I hope you hear that this is also meant to undermine societal dynamics that surround us. I mean, just to think of the societal values that are thrown upon us. You know, who are the people that get valued? Often it's the people with money, you know? Or it can be the people who can get a ball into a basket. You can make a lot of money. So those are overcoupled. I know this is great. And I want to say, of course, there's something about the beauty of athletic ability. But this is placing our values a little bit. And then there's the implicit things that happen around who gets valued, just in terms of if you look at societal dynamics around race, right? Or around gender. And the list goes on. Around age. You know, this infatuation with youth. So there's something very radical both for our personal lives and the society that we live in. What I'm going to invite all of us to do, and I'm going to also situate this weekend retreat, because this weekend retreat is going to be very important for this as well. But I want to go through the sila, samadhi, panya. So sila, ethical conduct. For this week that we're together, a little bit more than a week, I'm going to invite you to, and we'll do this reflection in a little while here, is to take a kind of an ethical way of being in the world that you explore for this week. So let me give some examples of this. It might be exploring wise speech. And it might be just having, and less is more. It might be, can I engage in kind speech every day? And what is that exploration about? Or can I pause when I'm speaking? There's all kinds of dimensions around speech. Can I be mindful while I'm speaking? So that might be one facet that you explore. Or you might have as your intention for this little over a week, this week the thing that I'm going to explore that's what I'd call in the ethical domain is can I engage in one compassionate act each day? Or engage in kindness. It could be something as simple too. I want to just expand it. Like every day I'm going to pick up a piece of trash on the road. You know, every day, you know, you're going to smile to the cashier. So I'm talking really simple things too. But it's getting clear about a wholesome or a good act that you're going to engage in and explore, or a domain. And what's going to be most important about it? This is going to be the hard thing. It's going to sound so easy, but the most important thing about this training that the Buddha talks about is that you reflect on how well you did. Yeah, I know. Because your mind's going to go to how you suck at this.
Right.
And so sometimes it is good, as I like to say, to aspire high and aim low. If it's only picking up a piece of trash a day, I actually think that that's a really cool thing to do, because the main training is not only the act, but reflecting at the end of the day and being able to say, wow, I did a good thing and this feels so good. Wow, I just love the feeling of doing something good and to reflect on it. I'm more interested in that than all the mistakes you make. It's the most important thing when the Buddha talks about ethical conduct is you starting to abide in your ethical integrity, whatever it is. So we'll take some time to reflect on it. So that's one realm. And it can feel good. So much of this path is about feeling good in particular ways. So that's a realm that we'll explore. And then the other realm, samadhi. What will get us off on this is to begin with is this this retreat. And samadhi, what I mean, basically, I'm just going to use the word meditation in this context to simplify it, is for this week, I also want you to commit to some kind of daily commitment to silent, formal sitting meditation. And all of you are going to be here on the weekend retreat, right? So cool, you got next 2 days covered. Phew. Nice. Isn't that sweet? On Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I think we are going to meet Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So we're going to sit a little bit then. Mm-hmm. But something in addition to that too, that you're doing on your own. And this is going to, I'm going to speak more about this just on the retreat. But it's also just beginning to create a habit, because so much of getting the benefits of meditation is having the habit of doing this regularly. As Aristotle said, that excellence is a habit, not an act. And I love that clarification. And I don't know if anybody had to study Aristotle and his Nicomachean Ethics, but the basis of his ethics was around creating habits around our ethical conduct is what creates excellence in our life. So then we're going to explore that too. And then you just have to decide what you're going to commit to for the week in terms of what you're going to do after Sunday when you sit on your own. And again, what we're looking for is the same thing with the ethical conduct. I invite you to aspire high but aim low. So don't have this aspiration, don't have this like intention of like, I'm going to sit 4 hours a day. and you've never done it before. That's a setup. Because we're looking for you to be able to go to bed at night and say, wow, I did a good thing. Do you see how this is going to be the basis? Is actually training and looking and reflecting on your life in that way. Because you might notice you might already have the other one down. Right? We already got that habit. I don't know if it leads to excellence, but there it is. And so to reflect on that, if it's only 10 minutes or 15 minutes, great. If it's 5 minutes, wonderful. If you just want to make the commitment that you're going to get your butt on the chair or the cushion every day, wonderful. We're looking at what's possible. And then if you do more than that, wonderful. The same thing with ethical conduct. If you do something more than what your intention is, well, even better. So we have sila, ethical conduct. Samadhi, which I'm talking about, is meditation. And then the last one, punya, is something that we'll be exploring together probably on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we're going to be beginning, what we're going to begin to explore is just noticing what you're noticing throughout the day in terms of when we start to bring mindfulness during your day and noticing how you're starting to relate to the difficulties in your life. So that's going to be the other facet is just becoming curious during the week, you know, whether it be on the retreat or afterwards. Where do you, again, these two very simple facets is becoming curious of when you notice suffering, what's going on in the mind? Well, I'm having a crappy day. Oh, wow. Oh, there's so much aversion in the mind. Interesting. Oh, there's some of the where it's arising from. Oh, I can start to notice that. So I'm turning towards my suffering in a little bit different way of noticing what's going on there. And then the other aspect, the other part of the practice is going to be noticing when there's no suffering. The punya part we're going to get to much more Monday evening. I want to just get us started with the first two, because that's in and of itself going to be enough in terms of that. So this is the main framework, sila, samadhi, punya. Ethical conduct, samadhi, meditation, punya is wisdom. The theme of this weekend retreat, which I'll be going over tomorrow morning, underlies all of this. The theme is going to be around intention, cultivating intention. And on the retreat, we're just going to have one intention, just the willingness to be present. But what I want to point out is that intention underlies all of this. I'm training to place an intention, the willingness to have a certain kind of ethical conduct, and then we notice what happens, but I'm placing that intention, the intention to sit daily and be mindful during the day, which we'll get to again on Monday evening, placing that intention. So this is really going to be the basis of it. And then the other aspect of this that we'll be engaging in, just like we're engaging in it tonight, is this aspect of community. As I say, I know many of you heard this before, you can't do this path alone. Community is necessary, and no one can do it for you. And both are true. You have to put forth these intentions this week if you want something different in your life. It's the only way it works. No one can do it for you. And you can't do it alone. What strikes me when I reflect on the life of the Buddha, he spent most of his day, every day, creating community. I think that's what's something that we can forget, especially in an individualistic culture. We can forget that this was the basis of that practice when he first began to teach, was community. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm so excited about doing this here, because I think there is such a beautiful sense of community already.